Mrs. Grace Merriweather sat on my left, and I felt it would be polite to talk to her. Mr. Merriweather, a faithful Methodist under duress, apparently saw nothing personal in singing "Amazing Grace, How Sweet the Sound That Saved a Wretch Like Me." It was the general opinion of Makeham, however, that Mrs. Merriweather had sobered him up and made a reasonably useful citizen of him. For certainly, Mrs. Merriweather was the most devout lady in Makeham. I searched for a topic of interest to her. "What did you all study this afternoon?" I asked.
"Oh, child, those poor Maroonas," she said, and was off. Few other questions would be necessary.
Mrs. Merriweather's large brown eyes always filled with tears when she considered the oppressed.
"Living in that jungle with nobody but J. Grimes Everett," she said. "Not a white person'll go near 'em but that saintly J. Grimes Everett."
Mrs. Merriweather played her voice like an organ. Every word she said received its full measure. The poverty, the darkness, the immorality, nobody but J. Grimes Everett knows. "You know, when the church gave me that trip to the campgrounds, J. Grimes Everett said to me, 'Was he there, ma'am?' I thought, 'Home on leave,' J. Grimes Everett said to me. He said, 'Mrs. Merriweather, you have no conception, no conception of what we are fighting over there.' That's what he said to me."
"Yes, ma'am."
"I said to him, 'Mr. Everett,' I said, 'the ladies of the Makeham, Alabama Methodist Episcopal Church South are behind you 100%. That's what I said to him. And you know, right then and there, I made a pledge in my heart. I said to myself, when I go home, I'm going to give a course on the Maroonas and bring J. Grimes Everett's message to Makeham. And that's just what I'm doing."
"Yes, ma'am."
When Mrs. Merriweather shook her head, her black curls jiggled. "Jean Louise," she said, "you are a fortunate girl. You live in a Christian home with Christian folks in a Christian town. Out there in J. Grimes Everett's land, there's nothing but sin and squalor."
"Yes, ma'am."
"Sin and squalor. What was that, Gertrude?" Mrs. Merriweather turned on her chimes for the lady sitting beside her. "Oh, that. Well, I always say forgive and forget. Forgive and forget. Thing that church ought to do is help her lead a Christian life for those children from here on out. Some of the men ought to go out there and tell that preacher to encourage her."
"Excuse me, Mrs. Merriweather," I interrupted. "Are you all talking about Mayella Yule?"
No, child. That darky's wife. Tom's wife. Tom
Robbins, ma'am."
Mrs. Merriweather turned back to her neighbor. "There's one thing I truly believe, Gertrude," she continued, "but some people just don't see it my way. If we just let them know we forgive them, that we've forgotten it, then this whole thing'll blow over."
Mrs. Merriweather," I interrupted once more. "What'll blow over?"
Again she turned to me. Mrs. Merriweather was one of those childless adults who find it necessary to assume a different tone of voice when speaking to children. "Nothing, Jean Louise," she said in stately largo. "The cooks and field hands are just dissatisfied, but they're settling down now. They grumbled all next day after that trial." Mrs. Merriweather faced Mrs. Farrow. "Gertrude, I tell you there's nothing more distracting than a sulky darky. Their mouths go down to here.
just ruins your day to have one of 'em in the kitchen. You know what I said to my Sophie, Gertrude? I said, Sophie, I said, you simply are not being a Christian today. Jesus Christ never went around grumbling and complaining, and you know, it did her good. She took her eyes off that floor and said, no, Miss Merriweather, Jesus never went around grumbling. I tell you, Gertrude, you never ought to let an opportunity go by to witness for the Lord. I was reminded of the ancient little organ in the chapel at Finch's Landing. When I was very small, and if I had been very good during the day, Atticus would let me pump its bellows while he picked out a tune with one finger. The last note would linger as long as there was air to sustain it. Mrs. Merriweather had run out of air, I judged, and was replenishing her supply while Mrs. Farrah composed herself to speak. Mrs. Farrah was a splendidly built woman with pale eyes and narrow feet. She had a fresh, permanent wave, and her hair was a mass of tight gray ringlets. She was the second most devout lady in Maycomb. She had a curious habit of prefacing everything she said with a soft, sibilant sound. Grace, she said, it's just like I was telling Brother Hudson the other day. Brother Hudson, I said, looks like we're fighting a losing battle. A losing battle. I said, it doesn't matter to 'em one bit. We can educate 'em till we're blue in the face. We can try till we drop to make Christians out of 'em. But there's no lady safe in her bed these nights. He said to me, Mrs. Farrell, I don't know what we're coming to down here. I told him that was certainly a fact. Mrs. Merriweather nodded wisely. Her voice soared over the clink of coffee cups and the soft bovine sounds of the ladies munching their dainties. Gertrude, she said, I tell you there are some good but misguided people in this town. Good but misguided. Folks in this town who think they're doing right, I mean. Now, far be it from me to say who, but some of 'em in this town thought they were doing the right thing a while back, but all they did was stir 'em up. That's all they did. Might have looked like the right thing to do at the time. I'm sure I don't know. I'm not read in that field. But sulky, dissatisfied. I tell you, if my Sophie'd kept it up another day, I'd have let her go. It's never entered that wool of hers that the only reason I keep her is because this depression's on, and she needs her dollar and a quarter every week she can get it. His food doesn't stick going down, does it? Miss Maudie said it. Two tight lines had appeared in the corners of her mouth. She had been sitting silently beside me, her coffee cup balanced on one knee. I had lost the thread of conversation long ago, when they quit talking about Tom Robinson's wife, and had contented myself with thinking of Finch's Landing and the river. Aunt Alexandra had got it backwards. The business part of the meeting was blood-curdling. The social hour was dreary. Maudie, I'm sure I don't know what you mean, said Mrs. Merriweather. I'm sure you do, Miss Maudie said shortly. She said no more. When Miss Maudie was angry, her brevity was icy. Something had made her deeply angry, and her gray eyes were as cold as her voice. Mrs. Merriweather reddened, glanced at me, and looked away. I could not see Mrs. Farrow.